Before we get into today's podcast, I just want to tell all the Canadian listeners and viewers out there about Maple Wi-Fi. Now, internet on the road, if you're living in a van, or even if you're living in rural Canada, is a problem. The three big cell providers here just absolutely are so expensive, and the unlimited internet they provide is absolute trash once it gets throttled. I think Canada is up there in one of the worst countries in the world for cost and data speeds. So Maple Wi-Fi is a solution that I found when I was living in my van that worked wonders. It's this little tiny device here, and it holds a charge for up to 24 hours. So it's nice and portable. You can bring it with you, and it doesn't require a bunch of hardware to be installed on your van or to be set up like Starlink does. And it doesn't have to stow away and have space to be able to be stored. It's just this small, tiny little device. So I was able to actually get rid of my data plans, which worked out to about the same cost as unlimited high-speed internet. The way this works is you can connect to any network available from any provider within Canada, Rogers, TELUS, Bell, Freedom, anything that's available. And so you can kind of optimize for your location and figure out the best speeds. And the other way that it works is Maple Wi-Fi provides a AT&T unlimited international roaming plan through this, and so that is how they circumnavigate the throttling that happens for Canadian providers. So if you're interested in getting the best internet, portable internet device within Canada, I believe, you can check out the link in the description. It's an affiliate link, so we get a small cut direct from Maple Wi-Fi. It's no extra cost to you, and it goes a long way to support this show. So if you're interested, check out the link in the description. Thanks for watching and listening to this podcast, and now let's get into today's episode.
My name is Jessica Rambo, and I'm the founder of Painted Buffalo Traveling Studio. That's self-converted school bus that I built for my family and I to travel around the United States and not only adventure and explore as a family, but also bring resources and highlight veteran artists out on the road.
Interesting. Okay. So you're in your van or in your bus right now, by the looks of it.
Yeah.
Very cool.
There he is.
Amazing. And how did the bus kind of come about? What was the idea behind that? And walk me through the process maybe of building it out and acquiring it and all that.
Absolutely. So this journey started, it's insane to say, but 4.5 years ago or so. After the Marine Corps, I went to art school. I was medically retired from the Marine Corps after 10 years. I got in a really horrific car accident, broke a lot of things, a lot of, you know, back and forth, but eventually it was deemed I was unfit for duty. And so, with that and all of the things that accompany most veterans when they're transitioning out of the military, I struggled with drugs and alcohol and, you know, a lot of mental health craziness. And if you know me or my story, or even just click on any of my posts on Instagram, I talk very openly and very candidly about all of those things. But as a military member in the United States, you get what they call free college. And so after my time, I decided to go to school and see what that was about. Because I was retired from the military, I said, I'm retired. I'm going to do something fun. So I went to art school. Originally, I went to be an art teacher, but quickly realized I really love my children, but I don't love other people's children. And that was not the good fit for me. And so I changed my major to sculpture and ceramics with a concentration in metal fabrication. And when I did that, I started looking into the tiny house movement and really what was my next steps after art school, because that was only a couple of years, but then what am I going to do? So on a whim, I bought a 1997 Bluebird school bus off of a Facebook marketplace from a high school in New Jersey. And I was going to school in North Carolina. And so I drove it to North Carolina and just got to work. I My first bus we built over 2 years of having it, and moved in and slowly built more things on the road. But ultimately we drove it almost 60,000 miles through 37 states and insane amount of adventures and national parks and all of that kind of stuff. And this past October, I bought a new school bus. I sold my last school bus and I bought a new one. It's bigger and I've upgraded a lot of things and learned a lot on the road and meeting a ton of people and kind of collecting resources and everything, and have really invested in making this like the bus I wanted to build 4 years ago, but didn't have the skills or know-how or, you know, even the ability to build. So now I'm almost six months into building this one, and we're about to hit the road. So the first one took 4 years to build, and this one has taken me 6 months. So I've definitely learned and grown and collected a lot of knowledge on the road.
So how many are there of you traveling in the bus?
Full-time is me and that little guy that you just saw peeking over my shoulder. He's 11. And then we have a cat named Sushi, and we have a dog, two dogs, one Bella and one Atlas. And we also have a leopard gecko named Lemon. That's full-time. I also have a daughter. She's 14. And like most 14-year-olds, they're into school and plays and track and all of the things. And so she decided regular school was for her. And so that's what I love about the community is there's so many diverse families and they look different and they feel different and all of that. And we're just one of those cool, quirky families that are able to co-parent and do things on the road that is, you know, a little different or not the family dynamic that you're used to seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a community full of all sorts of different people, like you said. So I'm really curious, why did you choose to do the school bus conversion over the other options that there are?
It just seemed like the hardest thing to do, and I tend to go and pick the most challenging thing I could think of, and I kind of go off on that path. You know, when I decided to join the military, I chose the Marine Corps because it was tough and hard, and if I could make it, that made me tough and hard. And then after the military, one thing that I was, you know, wanting to do was go to art school and be an artist, but that just didn't seem like I could do it. And so I just applied to a bunch of art schools and kind of figured it out on the go. And so one big reason I chose buses over a van or an RV was the size. I wanted something large where we all could be together but still be comfortable and have our own individual spaces. If it was my son and I and two dogs and a cat at the time I was building the first bus, we probably wouldn't have survived, you know, coming up on 4 years in bus life. So my first bus I bought was 32 feet, and it was perfect. And my son was, you know, 6, 7 years old when I first started building, and now he's 11. So he's grown. Our zoo has grown a little bit with some animals on the road that we have collected. And so when I bought this bus, this one is 40 feet. So I wanted, you know, the same vibe and the same, you know, small, homey log cabin feeling that I think I have become known for in the Painted Buffalo, like bus, you know, this dark blue cabinets and dark wood and that kind of stuff. And so I wanted to keep that same vibe, but just a little bit bigger. And safety wise was a big thing for me. I didn't know as much going into it, the difference between buses and RVs, but now like really seeing the diverse community on the road and struggles that people have had, I really am thankful that I chose buses over RVs just for, you know, if somebody, heaven forbid, crashes into me, you know, we might have a little damage, but everybody will be okay. Where if I was in an RV and someone hit me, it's like a cardboard box. And I've seen a lot of explosions on the side of the roads where it's like, oh yeah, if somebody was in there, they're definitely not okay, you know, kind of thing. So definitely the school bus route was the best for us. You know, they're built like tanks. They're built to protect children. And, you know, I really like it, but I also just aesthetically, it's quirky and weird. And we get a lot of people kind of like looking at us like, what the heck is in there? You know, I get a lot of, is that a prison bus? Or what are you doing in there? And I say, oh, it's my home. And they are like, what? You know, I just like that, like, cool reaction that people, or they see you driving down the road and they just smile because they know that we're just some hippie, quirky people. You know, little do they know that I'm a Marine and, you know, just living my retirement and my life, you know, to the fullest, which is, you know, ultimately what we're all trying to do out here on the road.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of uniqueness to all of the school bus conversions I've seen out there, and you can really make it your own compared to, a, you know, an RV.
Yeah. I think that was part of the DIY bus. You know, yes, you can buy an RV and kind of gut it and do some things with it. And I have seen some really amazing, beautiful RVs. I just wanted to be able to build it, and if something broke, be able to fix it and learn everything about, you know, my home. And so when I'm out on the road, I have every tool that I use to build the bus, and I have every, you know, quirky weird thing and extra parts and all of the things. So I'm very self-contained and self-aware with the bus stuff, where the RV, if somebody else put it in, I didn't think that I would be so inclined to learn how to fix it. You know what I mean? So with the bus stuff, because I learned how and where to put everything, I also know how to fix it when it breaks.
Yeah, totally. That's an important aspect as well. So you mentioned that like the tiny house movement was sort of what got you interested in this tiny living, but I'm curious to know why the nomadic type of lifestyle was interesting to you. Why have you decided to travel with your time and with your family?
So I grew up in a military family. My mom was in the military. She was also a single mom. I grew up, you know, driving across the country to different duty stations and doing that. She was stationed overseas, you know, and did a lot of overseas travel and that kind of stuff. And so I think I have just naturally had that like gypsy heart kind of traveling thing in me already. And so in the military, that's what I did. I wandered around and went to all kinds of cool countries. But when I thought back about it, it was really, I'm defending my country and I'm doing all these things for my country, but I've never even like explored my own country and what vast land. Everybody comes here to kind of go to Yellowstone and go to Yosemite and go to, you know, all of the Florida and, you know, up to Maine and all of these different things. But I had never even done that. You know what I mean? I had explored all other countries, but I've never explored my own. So because I had the safety net of my retirement and, you know, funds, and that was my, you know, my money that I used to build the bus and to travel, I was able to take my family on what turned out to be like the ultimate family vacation, but that was just our lives. You know, our lives turned into a everyday vacation and travel, and I homeschool, so everything has to turn into a learning, you know, thing. But we do the Junior Rangers program and we go to aquariums and go on field trips and go do, you know, all the things they're learning in their school books. We're going and able to be able to go and see all of those things.
Yeah, I'm curious, what kind of expectations did you have getting into this nomadic lifestyle of living in a bus, and sort of what unexpected realities did you face?
I don't know if I, you know, we all like, what if this happens? What do you, you know, we all hear our families and our friends like, that's nuts. What are you doing? And, you know, I think in all of the ways that I was like, I don't know, I'm just going to try it and wing it and see what happens, all of those experiences have exceeded my expectations for the better. A lot of things that I worried about, once I got used to driving all the time and planning and all the logistics, especially doing it solo, you know, like if something happens, it's all on my shoulders. I don't have a partner. I don't have, you know, a spouse or somebody to be like, okay, what do we do now? It's like, okay, mom, what do we do now? Like, you know, many a times I've had that question thrown at me and I'm like, okay, guys, like, let's figure it out, you know, kind of thing. And so just, I didn't expect my children to kind of like step up and grow up. And in a lot of ways, like, you know, they're our children, so we try to baby them. And especially as parents who work a lot, I was gone a lot of their lives. And so they weren't used to me being around all the time or, you know, catching them on things that I normally wouldn't have even paid attention to. But because we're in a small space or I'm, you know, all that excess baggage is off my shoulders of all the other life that adults kind of have, I've been able to really get to know them individually. They've gotten to know me not as the scary yelling mom that I used to be, but that I'm a, you know, a human being and I'm something other than their mom. I am a woman and I'm a traveler and I'm a builder and I'm an artist and also I am their mom. You know, that's not my main hat I wear. I'm many of people, and you know, just because they're my children, they are also other, you know, things as well. And really getting to know their individual personalities has been just incredible to see.
Yeah, and it's living in a small space, like you said, you're able to kind of catch these things earlier, but you're also able to just really kind of see who you are and really kind of see who they are as well. By the sounds of it.
Absolutely. I think a big thing that I've had this, you know, I parent a lot differently or than other people, but I think when you hold children accountable in a certain aspect, they will always meet your expectations. So if you don't have any expectations or you're thinking that that's not age appropriate or they're too young for that or they're whatever, then that's the line that they're going to reach. But if you say, I don't care that you're 10 years old, you can do that and we will do that and you will learn and it's hard. And guess what? You know, you can, if you want to do that, like, let's go figure out how to do that. You know, there's age appropriate learning and that kind of stuff. But if you hold them to a standard, they will always meet or exceed your standard. So that's a big thing that I've kind of, you know, given them leeway. You know, I don't free range parent to the extent of some of the, you know, nomadic community that I have seen, but I do let them have a lot of responsibility that in a normal household might not, you know, let their children do, you know, but that's just how I've raised them since they were little. So like when my kid's walking around with a hatchet or a machete, I know he's not going to harm anybody or himself. He's using it for a tool to cut down a thing, to make a bow and arrow or whatever the project is that day he's decided to do. You know what I mean? So when you teach kids, you know, how to be safe and to use tools, you don't have to, you know, protect them as much. But also protecting is also not good in some aspects as well. So, you know, I'm the type of parent, yeah, touch the stove, see what happens. I bet you'll never do that again, you know? And we kind of learn and grow, you know, in that way as well.
Yeah. And you also mentioned something there, kind of the roles, you know, the parenting role. I'm a mother, you're a child kind of thing. And sort of dissolving those to some degree, or having more than just a really set kind of role of understanding and allowing people to be more of an individual. That's, I think, totally important.
I am, you know, still learning and growing, but, and I still have the, I'm the mother, you're the child, like, line. and like don't get it twisted, but if you don't get it twisted, then we can go and do fun, abnormal things that kids don't usually get to do with their parents. You know what I mean? So there is a line of respect, and that comes from the way I was raised, that comes from the military, that just comes from the core values that I have as a human being. But if we are on the same level of respect, we can then go and do, you know, whatever you want. You know what? And, you know, my kids are now 11 and 14. And because I've raised them this way, I'm more in a mentoring stage of parenthood, not so much keep them alive and keep them safe kind of. I'm kind of like, okay, you want to go do that? Here's the tools to go do that. You know, if you want to learn about this, let's go do that. They're now, they are who they are going to be. It's now nurturing the characteristics and the personality that they already are. You just, you know, guide them in the direction that, you know, that they want to go, but in a safe manner, but also ingraining in them grit and hard work. And, you know, if that's your dream, this is the amount of work you're going to have to put into it to get there. And that's a huge part of, you know, my own story and, you know, doing a lot of things that I really love and enjoy and my good for my mental health. My children are seeing that in me. Mom is not just doting on us. She's doing things that actually make her happy. And also making money doing things that are making me happy and, you know, all of those kind of things, that's what they're picking up at the same time. I hope. Who knows? They're just science experiments, but we'll see.
Life itself is just an experiment after all anyway. So
absolutely.
So you mentioned a few different reasons for traveling, one of them seeing your backyard, seeing your home country. You also mentioned being an artist and supporting other veteran artists. So I'm curious what that looks like. What did you mean by that?
While I was in art school, I started volunteering at homeless shelters and veteran groups and that kind of stuff, and just bringing art materials to service members and just getting to know and just getting out into the community. I was taking classes, you know, artist, you know, classes for community-based art and, you know, murals on sides of buildings. Like, how did those things come about? You know, those kinds of things. So I knew I wanted to stay in my realm of the veteran community, out in the community. So I sought after those things. So I worked at the Veteran Center on campus and I volunteered at veteran, you know, things. I started working and doing things with the VA artist program, you know, those kinds of things. And then eventually I just realized what I was looking for was not really out there and in the capacity that I knew I needed. So like most veterans who start nonprofits, the reason they're starting the nonprofit is they're not finding what they know they need to heal and recover from whatever thing that they have. So my whole umbrella of the Painted Buffalo Traveling Studio and nonprofit is not only to highlight veteran artists that are already making it and telling their stories through art and using that as a job and an income and getting people to realize that is a proper job and a proper income. It's, you know, you hear a lot of, you know, oh, you're, you know, an Instagram influencer or whatever, or YouTube, or that's not a real job. I'm like, they're making real money. So guess what? It is a real job. And the amount of hustle and creativity and content they're creating is just, you can't even, you will never get there because your hustle is not hard enough as all of these guys. You know what I mean? So when I was going out and trying to figure out, it sounds so bad. And I've said this a few times and every time I'm like, this is not what I mean, but it is what I mean. I didn't want to be one of those people that just lived in a bus and got notoriety because they lived in a bus. I wanted a mission. I wanted to help people. I wanted something bigger and greater than myself. And so I started, you know, a nonprofit, got my tax deductible number, and now I'm just traveling around the country, meeting up with already veteran artists and telling their stories, but also getting other veterans to realize that they have stories to tell. They're incredible. They're inspiring. They're hardworking. They're heroes. But because they didn't, you know, win a combat action ribbon, or because they didn't, you know, go into combat, or because they didn't do this, whatever you think military members do, if that wasn't their military story, their story is still important. And what did you do? And those guys couldn't do the things that they were doing without, you know, I was combat camera, so photo, video, graphics, all that kind of stuff, or admin, or cooks, or, you know, just getting all veterans to be able to know their story is important, and whichever avenue they want to tell their stories in, let's get you your resources that you need. If you want to journal about it, if you want to be a musician about it, if you want to work with metal, if you want to work with clay or oils or watercolor, I mean, I literally have because I wanted to learn how to do all of this art making stuff. You know, people are like, what kind of artist are you? I'm like, I just like to make stuff, like, you know, whatever the day calls for, you know, and that kind of is the bus, you know, I'm building cabinets this bus around. The first one I bought pre-made ones because I wanted to learn how to make cabinets and make them custom to the bus, you know. So getting veterans, one, to realize more than an oil painting, there's so many other makers and artists type of work, you know, whatever you deem, you know, art, it's art because you called it art, you know what I mean? And so that's my whole, in a very long-winded sentence, trying to get veterans to tell their stories through whatever kind of art practice they deem they want.
So it's to inspire, to educate, and then also to hands-on help with supplies or materials or whatever.
When I started traveling with the first bus, I went to an Army Navy surplus store and I bought an ungodly amount of ammo cans. And I started filling them with art supplies for my own money. Just, you know, each ammo can had a little bit of everything. And then I started reaching out to veteran companies. So, you know, water bottle companies and t-shirts and coffee and all of this stuff, and saying, this is what I'm doing. Would you like to help? Or would you like to put something in these ammo cans? I'm giving them out. And they were like, wait, you're giving them for free? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, do you track them? I'm like, no, I give them a box and go tell me your story, you know, kind of thing. And so it started catching on that, you know, I was doing that. So around the country, people would meet up with me and bring ammo cans. And so that's now what I've been doing the last couple of years, is filling ammo cans with art supplies and giving them out on the road to veterans that, you know, say, hey, I'd love to, you know, join your, you know, I call it a movement. I don't know if that's high of a word, but what I want to do is just, you know, get veterans telling me their stories. So, you know, whatever's in that ammo can, use it, just send me a photo. And, you know, that's what I've been doing. And I just started an Instagram because I have deemed now I have enough content for the Paint Can Project. And start telling these veterans stories through art that they have made to tell their own story. Because a lot of people say, oh, Marine, you did this. And that, I'm like, actually, no, that wasn't even my job at all. This is what I did. So people kind of in their head tell what your story is. And this is a way for individual veterans to say, although I was in the Marine Corps, I wasn't a war fighter. Majority of my work was telling the stories of war fighters doing humanitarian work. For the 10 years I was in the Marine Corps, that's the majority of the stories I was telling, was, you know, natural disasters and US aid delivery and, you know, non-lethal weapons training in Thailand and, you know, those kinds of things. So instead of the, you know, world telling you what a veteran's story is, I want them to tell their own story through their eyes. What who are you and what do you want the world to know about you? You know, you're more than, like I said, I'm more than just a Marine. That was a hard discovery because when the Marine Corps, you know, divorced me, you know, when I was medically separated, I was like, what am I but a Marine? I'm nothing. But that is not true. I am a mother. I am an artist. I am a woman. I'm a builder. I'm, you know, strong and independent. And here is my story. And so how I've kind of grown this community and got my name out there and Painted Buffalo and the Paint Can Project, I want to be able to provide that same thing to veterans out on the road. Eventually have a homestead and a hub station and a veteran artist residency kind of farm. But right now, it's in the small scale of a quirky old school bus.
That's so cool. That's a really cool story. And that's the thing, too, is just every single person has something to tell and something to share. And it's really cool. You know, you're focusing on a community that's near and dear to you. But I think there's a lot of hidden artists out there that need to express themselves. And it's cool that you're, you know, helping people do that. So I'm curious also to get back kind of to the bus itself. What kind of specific components do you have in your bus and how did you sort of build it out so that it functions for you?
Although it's a traveling studio and I have just about any kind of art making thing in here, I also had to have it safe and homey for my kids. So, you know, I'm still building this one, but we have been living in this one since the day I bought it, October 16th of 2021, you know, a couple months ago. And we just put an air mattress in the middle of a metal bus and started building around us. Our first bus, I, you know, was in an apartment and going to school and working on weekends and that kind of stuff. But this one, we kind of build it for people. We're kind of like the hangout bus. So our living space is a lot bigger than our sleeping quarters. I mean, for us and, you know, we just sleep there. What do I need this big, you know, half the bus taking up with sleeping quarters when all you're doing is just sleeping? So majority of the spaces when I build buses are the living room, kitchen area. And you can see the door there. That's more than half of the bus is, you know, this whole kitchen area and the living room area. But this bus and the last bus has a living room, full kitchen, a full bathroom. My last bus had a bathtub. This one I'm putting in a shower. I'm debating the bathtub. I really like the bathtub, but I kind of started building and then we're like, oh wait, I want to put a bathtub. Where am I going to put it? This one has two bunks, one for each of my kids. My last bus had a full size bed, and it was quite small. And so this one, I put a king size bed and the whole back of the bus and my closet area, is back there. But I also put a Glowforge in this bus. Do you know what that is? It's like a laser engraver. And so I've kind of upped my traveling studio game. So I have all the art supplies. I have potter's wheels. I have all kinds of things. And I was like, what would be really awesome that you might not find out there? And so I put a Glowforge in and I'm running it off of solar and working on all of the schematics on how to make that work, you know. Instead of an AC, that's usually the thing that people are trying to figure out, how to run an AC on solar. I'm like, how do I run a Glowforge on solar? Like, it's a lot of power. It's not as much power as I had anticipated, which is cool. But I want to be able to go to any veteran in any place off the grid and be able to be like all encompassed, you know, be able to do whatever you need. And so the Glowforge was a big step in that. So, you know, making signs, and I'm making all kinds of crazy things for the bus and starting to build my maker space shop on my website, for other people to be able to buy things that we've made on the Glowforge and that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's kind of a duality thing. although it's a traveling studio, it's also my children's home. And so how to kind of make that balance. Thankfully, they're both very artistic and like to do those kinds of things. So it's not overwhelming that mom's art supplies are all over the place. They also use them all. So that's helpful.
That's really cool. That's super cool. So yeah, what is your electricity setup like? And also, do you have a heater in your bus?
I currently have a diesel heater, the same Chinese made $150 one on Amazon. And that thing is like a sweatbox. It's like amazing. And so we use that, you know, we've been going in and out of hot and cold lately because we're traveling throughout states. The last bus also had a diesel heater and a wood stove. This area right here is planning on a wood stove eventually. I just haven't gotten to that step of the build yet. As far as electrical solar setup, I just installed 2 300-amp-hour Battleborn lithium batteries. I have the whole Victron setup, you know, all the blue kind of in my solar closet there. And I haven't installed yet, but I have 4 400-amp-hour or watt solar panels. So I have about 1600 watts of solar, 600 amp hours of lithium battery. So a pretty beefy system compared to my last one. I compromised a lot. I did a lot of, like, you know, when it got dark, turned off my system. When the sun came up, turned on the system, you know, those kinds of things, because I wanted to be off grid, but I didn't have the funds to make these big, huge, elaborate systems. And that was a big thing in my first bus that I tried to show, that you don't need these $100,000 buses and all this craziness. You know, you can live this lifestyle the same exact, I'm parking next to these rigs and living the exact same life that they're living and having, you know, a lot of fun. And I didn't spend nearly as much money as they did on their rigs. You know what I mean? That, and I built everything myself and I recycled a ton of stuff. I bought everything aftermarket or, you know, used on Facebook Marketplace. I definitely lived the frugal life in the first bus. And I've upgraded a little bit here on this bus in certain things, like the electrical and solar components, the Glowforge. I put in a full oven stove this time instead of a camper stove. You know, I've definitely upgraded in a few things, but I still stayed true to the values that I had of anybody can live this lifestyle for any amount of money that you make, as long as you're willing to compromise in certain areas, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be a stepping stone too. You can compromise at the beginning and save up some money and slowly upgrade. And now it sounds like your system is going to be very impressive once it's set up fully. I mean, that's quite a lot of solar, quite a lot of battery, and yeah, that's going to be awesome, I think, for a full school bus.
I'm excited. I don't even know, like, what I'm going to do with that amount of electricity. But I wanted to make sure that I didn't have to do what I did in the first bus, which was fine. I mean, literally the first year we lived in the bus, we didn't have electricity. And like you said, I, you know, saved up for panels and then I saved up for batteries and then I saved up for all the components they said you needed for electric. You know, like, I did the saving thing. And I mean, the benefit of building a bus and then selling it is more times than not, you're going to make a little bit of a profit. And so that's what I did. I wasn't able to build another bus unless I sold my first bus. So I sold my first bus so that I was able to build this one. And I made a little bit of a profit. I invested that money into the places that the first bus didn't have. So I invested it in the second bus, like electrical and solar and the things that are important when you're wanting to live the way we do, where we dip off into nothingness for like an entire month. I've built both of my buses to be able to go off and be able to not see anybody for a month and still be okay, you know. And so we're building this one and we're working on going up to Alaska. So there's a lot of things that I'm adding to this bus to be able to make the trek to Alaska and travel and be a lot more off-grid this time around than the first one as well. Pre-decide the adventures you want to do and then build your rig to fit those needs. You know, it's the same as, are you going to want to go into the snow and in the winters in your bus, or are you staying in Florida or going to Baja or what? You know, you kind of build your bus that way. And although we build our buses, you know, to stay warm, there has been many a times we've accidentally got caught in very cold weather. So this bus, I pre-plan to whatever environment we end up in, we'll be okay.
Yeah, it's nice to have something versatile. So what you said there leads me to my next question, which is, where do you typically end up parking your bus and staying overnight?
So in the last 3 years, we've lived full-time in the bus. We've never paid for water, we've never paid for electricity, and we've never paid for parking. I made it a goal. It started out because I was frugal and wanted to spend more money on adventures and diesel than on, I mean, a place that you're just going to sleep. I'm very practical, if you haven't noticed, with a lot of things. I'm like, that just doesn't make sense. Why would you pay money to sleep? So we have, and I'm okay with sleeping in truck stops and sleeping at gas stations and sleeping at Walmart and I've probably stayed in 100 different Cracker Barrels across the country. You know what I mean? So there are ways to do it. It's a lot more logistics and that kind of stuff, planning. But like I said before, if you want to be in the lifestyle, you have to make concessions. I read a quote the other day that said, you can either live your dreams or be comfortable, but you can't do both. And that's for sure. You know, I wanted this dream so badly and knew that the benefits for myself and my own recovery and my children would outweigh all of the, you know, badness. So I did everything I could to get into the lifestyle, and I'm still doing that. You know, I don't pay for parking. I don't, you know, pay for water. I don't pay for electricity. You know, right now building the bus, I'm staying at a friend's house and I'm helping them. And, you know, he's helping me put in, you know, some stuff and kind of tag teaming some projects on the bus. But once we get off onto the road, it'll be back to, you know, electricity off the grid, you know, running off of the sun, filling up at gas stations and, you know, RV parks or wherever we can find water, you know, the whole gambling with water kind of thing. And then, you know, doing the same thing with using BLM land and truck stops and rest stops and, you know, big lot stores and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What are some of the most memorable experiences that you've had while traveling in your bus?
Let's see. There's been quite a few times that I'm like, how did I get here? Like, oh my gosh, I have worked so dang hard and here I am, like, living this, you know, dream. I think the first time I had that, like, oh my gosh, I'm here, is, you know, like when I was building the first bus, everybody asked, like, where do you want to go in the bus? And, you know, obviously Painted Buffalo, I have a severe addiction to bison and all things, you know, buffalo. And so I would say, wherever the bison roam, that's where I want to go. Like, take me there. Like, and that seemed like so far away. And then I get there and there's just bison everywhere. And I'm like crying. My kids are like, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, we have made it. Like, I know you don't understand yet, but, you know, my dreams and my, you know, hard work and all the people saying I was crazy or whatever, this is like the moment that I'm like, ha, gotcha, I did it, you know, kind of thing. And I mean, as a parent, I get to live vicariously through my children, right? Like, they are learning about places in textbooks or learning about, you know, different types of people or whatever the thing is. You know, one is, my son really wanted to go to Glacier National Park to stand in McDonald Lake and see all the beautiful colored rocks. And we get there and he was like, this does not look like the photographs. I'm like, this is, you know, unedited. This is nature. This is real life. This is really what it looks like. You know, in July, there's moss growing on all the rocks. Like, scrape it off. There's the color, you know, kind of thing. So we've had some funny moments like that, and some, you know, if you ask my son, you know, he'll say my favorite state is Idaho, and that's not a normal thing that you, 11-year-old boy says, you know, Idaho, what's in Idaho? But, you know, we've swam in every hot springs you can find and went on some pretty killer hikes. And, you know, like, it's just a beautiful, unknown, magical place that hasn't been, it feels like it hasn't been discovered yet. But, you know, there's so many great places like that around the country that people don't even realize until you get there, you know. Driving through, you know, Monument Valley and, you know, Fire of the Gods and, you know, just like out in Navajo Nation, and you're like, I am literally on Mars. How did I get here? You know, the vast ecosystems and, you know, different types of environments that our one country has is just incredible. And that was like a big thing that I'm just like, so, you know, I keep telling my children, and I keep, other people have said to my children, like, you are living a life that not many kids get to experience. I hope you're soaking it in. I hope you realize how lucky you are. And although they're taking a lot of it for granted, and I'm dragging them on hikes and doing this and that, eventually, hopefully, they'll remember the awesomeness that I've hopefully provided, but also, you know, teach them a few lessons along the way.
Yeah, undoubtedly it'll shape them in some way into the future. I'm curious, have you ever gotten the knock before?
Quite a few times, especially because I don't pay for parking. I tend to try to weasel my way into places. I've never, a few times I'm like, oh man, like, what's about to happen? Thankfully, nothing insane has happened. I vouch it to my privilege of a white, you know, woman. You know, women tend to have the, like, just bat your eyes and the police will go away. There's many times that I've had to do that and they kind of go away. Or, you know, as a white person, it's a little bit different, you know, showing up to different communities. And I have to, you know, hold accountable those privileges that I have. One time during Black Lives Matter, and there was a lot of protesting, there was a call for like people to bomb Walmart. I'm not really sure why that was like the place to go. I'm like, everybody uses Walmart. Like, why would you pick that place? How about you go, you know, knock on your congressman's door to make a change? What does Walmart have to do with it? But I pulled into a Walmart parking lot in an all black town, and my last bus was olive drab green. It was a military looking bus, and I showed up to Walmart and it was surrounded instantly. I didn't know about the protesting Walmart thing. And a lot of cops showed up. And then I step out of the bus and they say, how many people are in there? And I say, a little boy, you know, it's just us two. And then they figured out, like, okay, you're safe. But in that moment, I was like, what is about to happen? Like, that is so insane that, you know, that happens, and it does. And, you know, we really need to consider, you know, those things do happen. You know, many people of color and, you know, queer folks and everything, I have heard many a stories that that's not the outcome that they have had, and that's insanity. And so, you know, the knock on the door, for me, I'm just like, you know, yeah, I'm pissed off. Yeah, I'm, you know, a human being, treat me like that. But for me, it's just safer to be like, sorry, officer, okay, and I'll leave. You know, some people want to stand their ground or whatever, but I don't got time for all that. I'm like, all right, fine, I'll leave and, you know, go. But I'm also in a very large school bus. It's not like I can hide very well. So it's like, you know, oh, sorry. You know, a few times I've had very rude people, and you just have to be like, sorry. You know, like, a lot of us like to park at the beach. What kind of houses are at the beach? Very wealthy people. So they call the cops and this riffraff is parked, you know, messing up my beautiful beach scene, you know, kind of thing. And you're just like, seriously, like, what an asshole. But you just got to move on and go about your day and don't let it, you know, damper the experience and the journey, because it happens, but, you know, the likelihood of it happening. But also, don't be parking in places that you know you shouldn't be parking in. Like, there's, you can trust your gut, and you know, especially as, like, a woman and traveling solo and with my children, if I feel weird about a place, I'm going to start my bus and drive away. That's going to happen. You know what I mean? So being able to trust your gut in those situations and don't, you know, piss anybody off, because it's just going to, you know, prevent the next person from being able to park or go places, or, you know, things are going to start shutting down and there's going to be no parking signs put up if you abuse the scenery and the, you know, situation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, you got to be respectful. What are some of your personal beliefs that bring you up when you're feeling low in life?
Well, I mean, like, a big kind of thing I talk openly about is depression and anxiety and mental health, you know, kind of things, not only from the military, but just being, you know, that causes a lot of, you know, a lot of people have depression and anxiety. And a big one for me is, although the nomadic community is very solo and I'm in a bus by myself and traveling by myself, I know that I still need that interpersonal connection. And so being able to meet up with my friends on the road and, you know, friends my son has made, and, you know, meeting up with veterans on the road and just having that, like, you aren't alone, you know, type of accountability is really helpful for me. Getting on a schedule, it can get real easy to kind of not be on a schedule, especially when half the time I don't even know what day of the week it is. And so I try to, you know, keep a schedule and keep a journal and keep, you know, contact with people, spend, you know, not as much time on social media and more time just living my life. It's hard when you're a content creator, and I kind of fell into that life kind of thing, but you know, it's hard to create content but also stay in the moment and live in it. So, you know, finding whatever that balance is for you. But for me, doing that has really, you know, helped my mental health, and just being able to, like, oh, we should go on this hike so I can take photos and post about it. That, although that seems not authentic, it is authentic, because I'm struggling. I need to convince myself any way, shape, or form to get outside and go on a hike. If I'm saying it's for other people, whatever, that doesn't matter. You got outside and you did it, and you went on the hike and you did the thing. You know what I mean? So I definitely use Instagram and other people holding me accountable to my standard. If it was up to me, I'd just sleep and lay in bed and watch Netflix all day when I'm depressed. But I know the weight of the umbrella of inspiring people is on my shoulders, whether it's with veteran nomads, with solo mamas, or with women. I know, and I get a lot of DMs about, you know, like, I bought a bus because you did it, and if you can do it, I can do it. I'm like, yes, I'm your biggest cheerleader. So I use a lot of other people's inspiration and inspiring me to get up and do the work. And then, and it's just like a cycle, you know, and then I am now inspiring other people to get up and do the work. And it sucks, and it's hard. And it's, you know, I am also the one laying in my bed watching Netflix, you know, late at night kind of thing. And it's, you know, connecting with my people in the community, you know, going to therapy. I go once a week, which is online, you know, which is awesome for nomadic people. And just, you know, really knowing what makes me happy and really being in tune with my emotions and then doing things to kind of get myself, because I'm going to be depressed, I'm going to have anxiety, I'm going to have all of these, you know, things. But, you know, now I've been able to go from laying in bed for 2 weeks at a time to, you know, a day, and then being like, okay, got that out of my system. Let's go. You know what I mean? And it's a lot of work and it's really hard. But I mean, I was on the lowest of the low, ready to go kind of track, and I made it out. And so I just want to tell other people that are struggling and in that position that even though, you know, the worst of the worst and the bottom of the barrel is happening, the only way is up, you know. And I've been there and I know what it's like, but there are ways and avenues to help that.
Yeah, definitely. And do you think that like living in a bus has helped you in that way? And in kind of like to further that question, what have you learned about yourself from living in this bus?
I mean, it seems a little dramatic, but it was life-changing and life-saving. When I bought the first bus, I had just detoxed on some of the most powerful, potent medication that you could be on as a person. And I was overdosed and overcompensating and had anything at my disposal being a veteran in the VA. And I was able to get sick really fast by a few key words at my doctor's appointment and being able to kind of enable the behavior. So when I went and said, I'm addicted to this, it can get pretty dark, you know, like I'm literally talking and having conversations with people in my apartment and they are not there. Like, there is something wrong with me. Please help me. And they pretty much said, this is not every veteran's story, but it is a lot of veteran stories. When you go to the doctor and they say, you're on it, you're addicted, that's your life, I'm so sorry, I can't help you. And I was like, I'm either going to detox and die or I'm just going to die. Those are my options. And so every time a prescription was due, and instead of going to the VA, I just didn't. And I went through the, you know, detoxing things that you hear about, you know, you see on intervention and you see, you know, in the, you know, the sweating and the craziness that's happening. I went through that. And so every month when I was detoxing, I just, a new drug, a new, you know, thing that I was getting myself off of. And in that time I was building the bus. And so there was many days I just didn't go to school and I went straight to the bus and just sweat it out and just beat the shit out of the bus, and rivets are not your friend. And so I just pulled all the bus apart, you know, during this time. And that was my way of, you know, detoxing and getting through the, like, the tragedy of my life is over as a Marine. What am I going to do about it now? And that's what I was doing. I was building the bus. And, you know, it seems so trivial or weird or whatever, but everyone has that thing that they, you know, they have to put their mind to and get over it. And that's what I was doing, building the first bus. So there was so much history and story and struggle and triumph in the bus building that, you know, it was very, very, I mean, I cried a lot when I finally came to the realization I should sell this bus and build a new one if I want to maintain and continue in the bus journey. You know, my kids were growing and we were kind of on top of each other and, you know, all of these kinds of things. And so I needed to build another bus. But the the power that the first bus had over my life for the good was, you know, unbelievable. And it sucks and it's hard. And like, some people are like, I just don't know what I like to do, or I don't know where to even start. But I know that feeling. And, you know, just starting is literally the hardest part. And like, yes, bus building and learning all the things and all the stuff is hard, but the making that leap of unknown faith is the hardest part, but it is so freaking worth it.
Yeah, there's inevitably that leap of faith and that fear you have to get through when you change your life. But it sounds like, I mean, it just sounds like you've had just an incredible story. You just have a really interesting story. And thanks for sharing. And what's next for you, Jessica?
So it's the beginning of March, right? We just hit March 1st today or yesterday. I am finishing up the bus. I've got about 30 more days of building, and it's not going to be completed the same as my first bus. I just made it livable. I mean, we've been living in this bus since it was just a tin can, but enough where I have all my solar set up, I'm off the grid, all my water source, everything to be able to, you know, go out and travel and kind of add here and there to the bus. But April 1st, we're hitting the road and heading west, and then slowly kind of curving the United States and knocking off quite a few adventures that we missed in the first 2 years of traveling. How we did that, I'm not sure. But hitting a lot of national parks and that kind of thing, and kind of caravanning with a few other veteran nomads up to Alaska. So I'm working on some content and some collaborations with some veteran companies, hopefully. And what I have done the last 2 years is, once I make our map of where we're going to go, I release it on social media so that my followers and veterans can find where I'm going to be and if I'm going to be near them. And that has seemed to be a little bit easier to find people than me just kind of calling out to local communities and be like, do you have a veteran population? And they're like, I know a guy that used to be in the army. You know, like, it's a little easier if I release my tour dates and where I'll be, and people contact me, and then they tell their friend and vice versa kind of thing. And I kind of build a route on top of our adventure route and incorporate the nonprofit route. And so I'm hoping, I have, in the last 2 years, I've given out 200 ammo cans full of art supplies. And so I'd like to continue the upward, you know, momentum of handing out ammo cans on the road. And I'm starting to build ones that I can ship out to people, so that no matter if you meet me personally, you can also be a part of the project and the movement of telling your story through art.
Very cool. Well, we might be in the same area around the same time. I plan on spending some time in British Columbia pretty soon. If you're heading to Alaska, maybe we could, I'll check out your tour dates and maybe we can link up.
Yeah, as soon as we, it's a little different, me just traveling by myself. And then, you know, most of us, when you start caravanning, you're like, I'm going this way. Anybody want to come? You know, kind of thing. So I'm planning from Seattle to Alaska with a few people. So once I get that kind of established and everything, I'll be able to know how long I'll be in certain areas and everything. So I'm excited to not only meet veterans and veteran artists on the road, but just nomads and people in general. That's my favorite thing, is just like be washing laundry and someone's like, aren't you that girl I saw on YouTube? I'm like, hey, I'm sorry, I'm awkward. You know, it's just so insane, but so awesome that, you know, this little journey that I started on, you know, a couple years ago has grown into this like motivation and inspiration for myself and other people, which is insane.
Yeah, for sure. Very cool. So, and maybe you can let everybody know where they can follow you on social media and check out your other projects that you've got going on too.
Yeah, so I have like pretty much all the social medias. I have YouTube. I haven't posted any videos, but my goal is this year to start making content and, you know, like family vlog type stuff on there. But my main source of social media is Instagram. And you can find us at the.painted.buffalo. And you can find us on TikTok, The Painted Buffalo, on Instagram, and on Facebook, Painted Buffalo. So anywhere you find social media pleasing for you, that's where you can find me. And we also have a website, paintedbuffalostudio.com. If you want to participate in the Paint Can Project, if you want to donate, if you want to, you know, just kind of email and pick and collaborate and do, you know, whatever kind of thing, you can find me on paintedbuffalostudio.com.
Great. Thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me.